Accession number 32389, Mr. Heath Hunter, Rail 4. Now, we're talking about flying training. Now, much of it will have been, you'll have started, I presume, with circuits and bumps.
Circuits and bumps, you did. And you probably did 20 hours of that to start with. Before you did anything.
Now, the circuits and bumps, did you realise how important it was?
I realise you've always got, if you get in the air, you've got to get it back on the ground. Because I don't want to jump out. That was one thing I would not do. Even when I was dropping paratroopers, I had the opportunity to... I was invited to jump from a balloon. I said, not bloody likely, I'm not doing that. That's one thing I'm not doing.
So you knew you had to practice that, your basic...
That is the essential. You've got to be able to... And, of course, you've got to... You'd have to do cross-countries.
Take me through cross-countries.
The first cross-country you did, we flew from... where we were, De Winton, we flew, it was almost due north. We passed the edge of Calgary, and we went to a place, another EFTS called Bowden. It was only a short trip, 90 miles each way. And it was, sure, you took off, flew north, and turned around, landed at Bowden, to prove you'd been there, went to the control tower, and checked in and checked out, and then came back home. And so they could ring up and say, well, you'd been there. So if you got lost on the way back, there's no way to find you. And so you went. That was the first trip we did.
So what navigation were you using? Were you just following?
You were using your dead reckoning skills. You had a map, and you had a railway line. And, of course, you've got to remember Canada is such a big place that if you see a town, it's not very big. Towns, unless you go to Calgary, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, Quebec, the towns are very small, maybe 20,000-30,000, and anything else, they don't call them villages, they're still towns. So you'd fly up there and come back, and so that was your first conference.
So would you really use dead reckoning, or would you just follow railways?
Railways are not quite as obvious there. When you see them, they're obvious, but when you're looking for them, they're not there.
What about rivers?
Yeah, rivers. Well, the Bow River. We were on the edge of the Bow River where we were, and in fact, only a couple of fields, and you were in the river. But the Bow River seemed to wander about. I never flew by it. It was mainly dead reckoning. You set your compass.
So how did you do dead reckoning then?
Well, you set your compass. You knew where you were going to go. You'd look at your map and say, well, it's due north or whatever, how many degrees it was. Set it on your compass, or set it on the... you had two compasses. You had a floating compass and you had the other one. And you just set it on there and fly on that. And then you'd make your deviations or alterations as you went along. And when you fly north-south, no trouble at all. It's when we did the next one.
What was the next one?
The next one, you did a triangular one. So you had to fly to one place, and turn on it, and go to another place, and turn on it, and then get back home. That one you could get lost on. But I had no trouble with any of those items. I think we only did two cross countries there. With more cross country flying came when I was on twins.
Now, take me through some of the aerobatics, if you like.
Well, the aerobatics, the first thing I ever did. Was ever taught to do was a loop.
Now, how do you do a loop then?
Well, you stick the stick forward with your wings straight and level, get up to a certain speed, 180 knots or something, pull back the stick, and if you're lucky, you go right over in a perfect loop. That was the easy one. The next one is when you try to do a roll off the top. I could never do the bloody thing, never. So I would never have been a fighter pilot. I've been watching on program on television dog fights. I know I'm getting away from the subject. And when I watched these fighter pilots, especially when they were in sabres, doing bloody air, you know, they're never on straight and level. I don't think I could have done that. Maybe so. If I'd tried, I could.
So what about rolling generally? I mean, you couldn't roll off the top of a loop, but could you do, the roll or the barrel roll?
Oh, yeah, I could do a roll, all right.
So how do you roll?
I don't know. Trim the aircraft properly, stick over to the left or right, and that would put the into the motions of the roll, and just keep on going, yeah. I've done it, but I.
Any other manoeuvres or
roll off the top, emilement turn, or emilement turn, whatever they call it. Oh, we did all these things, but you didn't have to be, as long as you could do. On what you had to do was on your test. If he says do a slow roll, you did a slow roll. So you didn't get much practice. You get a little bit, but you might only do a couple of hours.
Did you do any bombing or photographic reconnaissance practice there?
No.
Taking photographs? No.
No, that's getting into advanced flying.
That's not at the course.
We're still at elementary training, which is basically teaching you how to fly.
And anything else you remember about your flying lessons? Just interrupt yourself. What about the instructor? How did you get on with the instructors, both there and actually the previous one?
Oh, very well. They were very good. I mean, it was their job to train you, and that's what they wanted. And obviously, if you showed a bit of inclination wanting to fly, they were much more helpful. Some blokes didn't want to fly. Some people joined the Air Force rather than go in the Army. As simple as that. But if you showed a beast interest, they were with you. They'd help you.
And
but
they
were good. You didn't have much social contact with them. You only met them when you're in the flight room. You'd suddenly come out and say, Hunter, I'm taking you up. And you might not have the same instructor. You'd have two or three instructors. When I got to the next station, I had one instructor for most of the time.
And they gave you confidence, didn't they?
Oh, they gave you confidence. I remember on one occasion I was flying with one bloke, and I said, I can't land properly. He said, oh, of course you can. This was later. And he took a 25-cent coin out of his pocket and stood it on the thing which you selected your undercarriage out. And he said, if it falls off, you pay me 25 cents. If you land it properly and it stays on there, I give you. That was an incentive. I passed it. I got his money. But I didn't say I'd do it every time. But that day I was lucky and very fortunate and got away with it. And so at the end of the year, I think we did 70 hours at elementary flying training school. But
how long were you there for?
Oh, weeks. 6 weeks.
So roughly January to February.
Yeah, it was still winter when we moved, yeah.
And anything else happened there? I mean, any social life there? Or
no social life at all. They had a outdoor skating rink. It was so cold you could skate if you wanted to skate.
What about the weather? Tell me a bit about the winter weather conditions. I mean,
cold.
How bad was it?
Colder than we've had here. But the snow was dry. And if you were lucky, later on, we were in a place where the Chinook wind cleared the snow.
Did the snow not affect your takeoff and landing, things like that?
Well, they kept the runways clear. Mind you, I have been on when we've had to dig the runways out, with shovels, not with a mechanical cleaner.
But later, is it? Yeah, okay. So, anything else about your time at De Winton?
No.
So, where to next then? You passed. Was there a
test? At 70 hours, you took another test and you passed that. I had a bit of a nightmare on one of the early tests. We were then learning to fly by instruments. We learned basic instrument flying.
Well, tell me about instrument flying.
Awful.
How do they do that? Do they cover the cockpit? What do they
do? On the Cornell, you sat in the back and you pulled over a canvas hood, which completely shut off all daylight. No sign of light at all. You were inside the glass hood, and then you had this canvas thing inside, and then he'd say, all right, do this, do that. And I think I remember getting into a screaming dive, and I hadn't the faintest bloody idea how to get out of it. And eventually, I think by sheer good luck, he obviously wasn't going to kill himself, but eventually I managed to do the right thing and recover. And then I said, I made a bit of a hash there. He said, you did. He said, now we'll continue. It was his attitude. He wanted me to pass. So he said, we'll now do this. And I did everything else well after that. But so
was it difficult? I mean, just trusting the instruments, or what was the problem?
Oh, I don't know. Just sheer panic, I think. I think it was a form of claustrophobia. I'm sure it was.
Did you have goes on the Link flying trainer?
Link.
What
yes.
Did you have them there?
We had Link trainers.
And tell me about them. What were they? Because how good were they? Because I've not got a real picture of them in my head of how they worked.
Link trainer was a thing which was it was like It looked like an aeroplane when you looked at it, when you first went in the link trainer room, and it was up on a pedestal, and it was a series of hydraulic rams. And you could turn it, and it would turn that way, and it would tilt over. You couldn't loop it, but you could do all these things on it. And the instructor sat at a desk, and if he wanted to, he could set you on a series of... I had it for years. I still got it, I suppose, upstairs. He'd set you on a set of courses, and when you finished, you'd have drawn the plan of an aeroplane, your tail on body, wings. And if you were very good, the two bits at the end would meet, if you flew perfectly. I did that. So I could really instrument fly, but...
Do you think letting fly and train was a good thing? It's not good. I mean, was it useful to you?
I think it was the forerunner of what you have now at the airport, isn't it? Where these big things, these are monsters. I mean, we had nothing like that.
But it was realistic, as far as you were concerned.
Yeah, because you were sitting in the dark all the time. It wasn't as though you suddenly went from light into night. You wouldn't get that. It's a case of you climbed into the thing, they put the hood down, and it was dark. And then you just sat there. And, of course, you had the feeling, if anything went wrong, you weren't going to fall out. It wasn't going to crash. You'd just make a balls of it, and that'd be the end of it. So there was no element of fear. But when you're flying, of course, you get an element of fear.
Now, so what next, then? So where from there? You're there till about February. We're not sure about these dates.
Then I was posted to my gardening course. I was posted on the... Where the hell did I go? The most awful place in Saskatchewan. God almighty, I should know this. I'm thinking hard. We were posted to RAF Moose Jaw.
In Saskatchewan?
Hmm?
In Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan Moose Jaw.
Round about March 46. 44, sorry.
Yeah, well, yes, and I was going on my gardening course.
Now, can you explain what gardening course are? It's
what you do in gardening when you have a garden in England. I mistakenly, when I first joined the Air Force, had put down as a hobby that I was keen on gardening. So I arrived at this station, and the station warrant officer said, "Hunter, I see that you're a gardener. I have a good job for you. It'll keep you busy for the next 6 months." And I was then posted on to making paths and digging gardens with no knowledge at all.
Explain to me why you were training, because your training has been suspended.
Had been suspended for 6 months, or 5 or 6 months, they didn't say exactly when. And so we were there, and of course some of the chaps who were already there were some of those lads which I had been with when I was ill, and they'd gone on in front of me. So they were a course ahead of me.
Now, why had they suspended training? Were there too many of what?
Too many aircrew. Too many pilots. I mean, they were using pilots for all sorts of jobs in the end. But this was a rest period, really.
So tell me about the gardening, then.
I hated it.
So what were you doing?
Mainly it was making footpaths between huts. Instead of running across the lawn, he thought it would be a great idea if we got gravel, put boards down and fill them with gravel so everybody walked on the gravel paths instead of rowing out his lawn. And he said, and somebody said, "Well, what about soil?" "Oh, we'll get some soil." So they got a 10-ton lorry, and they got about six of us, and they sent us down to an airfield which had closed. It's a Assiniboia, about 80 miles away, to load up with soil, topsoil for his garden. I mean, the earth around Saskatchewan was just, or Saskatchewan was just the same. So we went out about four times in this lorry and filled it up and brought it back and decanted it and put it out and spread it. And so he finished up with some beautiful paths.
Now, what was morale like? Because you're all training to become pilots, to go and fight.
Well, I think at that stage that the ones that have been... like me, were gardening and doing other duties. I mean, one chap was very lucky. They made him, he was put in charge of the link trainer. They didn't have a link trainer, so he got that job. Well, that was good. He just had to go in, clean the floor, put the paper on, say, "Do this, do that." He had a good job, but Some of us had less than good shots.
So how did you feel? What was your going
I think everybody was very depressed. Very depressed indeed. Especially when some of the chaps who you'd been with 3 months before were on the course of going through, flying Oxfords. They were very niggled. But anyhow, you knew it would come to an end sometime, and it just didn't. It took 6 months, though. 6 months of wasted life.
So how long that was that? March to...
March to... Well, actually, it must have been earlier. It must have been... I think we started on the next course in September. So it must have been probably...
February.
Yeah, February.
February 44 to September 44.
That's it.
And did it... What about recreation? I mean, did you start drinking at this point? That's enough to put anyone...
Couldn't afford it. I don't think I ever had it. Yeah, the only time I started drinking in Canada was when I was in the next station.
Were the Canadians hospitable? I mean, there you are, stuck in Moose Jaw. Did they try and entertain you or keep you happy, the Canadians?
I think we got free entry to the natatorium, which was the swimming bath. I'm sure we got free entry because we went there every day. But no, I never met any hospitality there. Not at this stage. The next station, yes.
All right, let's go on then. So, because this is just a miserable period of 6 months then, with nothing much happening in gardening.
It just put me off gardening for life.
So, so in September 44, you go to where?
Claire's home. Claire's, C-L-A-R-E-S-H-O-L-M.
Now, what's at Claire's home?
Claire's home is a service flying training school.
Do you know which number?
No.
And whereabouts in Canada that is Claire's home?
It's about 80 miles south of Calgary.
So in the Calgary area? No.
Oh, it's due south of Calgary. Small place, population 4,000 maybe.
Now, what's the setup there then? What are you flying?
We're now flying Ansons.
Now, what was the Anson like? I mean, you've been in it as a nipper.
It was a great plane, easy plane to fly.
Now, why? What was easy about it? Because it's quite heavy, isn't it?
It looks heavy, but it flew quite well. It was fairly buoyant when it was flying. It was like flying at Lancaster. It looks clumsy, but in the air it was beautiful. A bit heavy, but the Anson, was a lot lighter than that. But you've got to remember, the Anson was at the beginning of the war was a bomber.
Now it was a twin engine.
Twin engine.
Does that make a difference for flying? Is there anything you have to remember or not remember?
Well, you've got to remember you've got two engines, which is always a benefit if something goes wrong with one. You can fly in one engine, you can come home on one engine. You can't do that on a single. You've got to come down.
Was it reliable?
Very.
Jensen?
Very. It was flying in very extreme conditions, cold weather, so cold that we kept them in the hangars at night in the winter. We were there winter time, and if it didn't start, you just pushed it aside and left it then, use another one. But you couldn't stop it outside, and we had panels that you fitted over the engine to keep the engine warm in flight. Because the temperature would be, minus temperature. I mean, I've been on the station, no snow, get up in the morning, you had to dig yourself out of your hut. As bad as that.
And so, what about did you actually have to clear the runway yourselves?
We did there only once. Only once.
Was
we
that
had
there?
Only once we had to. We had to clear the runway with shovels, yeah.
And that was there?
That was there.
Why did you have to clear it? I mean...
Well, you couldn't take over... Well, the same as they shut down London Airport last week, didn't they? There was snow on the runway, they couldn't take off.
But they couldn't use the normal machines, or...?
We didn't have any machines. The machines was manual. But that meant the people who were going to fly had to go... Everybody else on the station was digging as well. I'm surprised they found enough shovels.
Now, so what sort of flying were you doing on the Anson? What are you learning there?
Well, you're supposed to be able to fly now. You haven't got your wings, but you fly. We did circuits and bumps. You didn't do any more aerobatics, that was out. Circuits and bumps, and then cross countries. And then we used to go on They had a bombing range, which was an internal bombing range.
Now, tell me about the bombing, because we haven't done that. So, I mean, I presume the cross countries were much the same.
Always the same.
It's a bit longer.
Longer ones, longer, three legs on them. But then they had this bombing machine, which was in a shed or a hut. And a map used to go and roll as in across. And you were up in the gallery, and you had to set your bomb site. This is great fun. And sort of bomb a target which somebody had selected for you. Later on in life, I managed to miss the bloody bomb aiming target altogether. But that was
so. Different. So how did they have a sort of bomb aimer, or what were you doing?
They were training you to do everything. If you failed the pilot's course, they would then make you a navigator or a bomb aimer.
But what I mean is, with this bombing simulating machine, I mean, what were you using to judge when to bomb, or was it just?
It was all set up. You had a proper bomb site. You had a bomb site set up. And the bomb, I don't know what I've got on there. You could, on some bombs, you could put a thing in the machine, and that was a certain weight of bomb. To give the characteristics of where the bomb might land. And then you had to work out, you give your air speeds and everything you're doing, and the wind speed, as you said earlier. And you're trying to get all these things right and put the bomb on the target, which was a map. And you were bombing this town. I suppose it was a map of Germany somewhere.
And you enjoyed that?
Oh, quite enjoyed
that. Was it difficult? It sounds difficult, actually.
Well, it wasn't difficult, really. It was a bit of fun, actually.
And what about real bombing practice? Did you get any of that?
No.
Still not? What, anything else? Any photographic? Because I know that some of the service flight training schools, they did send them on photographic missions as part of cross countries. Did you do that at all?
We did occasionally have to take a picture of where you are. That was a cunning way of finding out if you were on the right track, though, wasn't it?
So it was more that than learning to be.
It wasn't learning to take photographs. It was you took the photograph and then they said, well, you were on the wrong bloody track. You shouldn't have been there. I mean, I can remember one occasion when we were on doing cross countries, and this instructor said to me, do it this way. And he said, you fly over the target, you turn left, and come back. And I said, well, why waste my time? I can turn on that course from here. No, you've got to fly over the target, then turn right and come in that way. You had to bomb from a certain range. But that was later on in bombing, that was the practice, because you were going to fly with, what, another 300 planes?
So you had to go a certain way.
And so that was all, like I said earlier, the drill you were getting, wasn't it?
Now, anything else about your flying there? Any incidents? Because you seem to have been lucky. No real scares so far.
Not for me, no scare. We did lose a chap I'd flown with at De Winton. He was He was an instructor, and he was flying. He was illegally low flying, and. We had to go out and he was missing, so we had to go out and search for him. And over the Bow River, they had to get across. They used to have what do you call them? There was a line across, and they had a barge or a boat, and they pulled it across. And he was low flying, and he hit the wire, and so he was killed.
So he was really low flying.
Well, that's when we did low fly, which we did on at this station, we did low, but not a lot of it. And they didn't.
What was low flying like for you?
Very dangerous.
How low are we talking?
Well, everybody trying to go lower than his mate, which officially I think low flying was 50 feet, but I would think most of them were flying about 10 feet. So one mistake and you were...
In an Anson.
I mean, although it was slow, comparatively slow, it would still kill you if you hit the ground. And we had another chap who, there was a lake called Lake McGregor, and this is a funny story, actually. He came to us from another station, and he'd been low-flying, and he managed to put the Anson into the lake. So he got down, stopped, you see, jumped up, undid his harness, jumped, opened the back door, and jumped out. And he's up to about 4 inches of water. He thought he'd be in a lake, you know, 2 or 3 miles long. It'd be deep. He'd landed in the shallowest part. He was jailed for it, of course. He went to the digger.
Why?
Well, you can't low fly unofficially. You hadn't got permission to do it.
So he was doing it without permission?
Without permission. What did he get, 40 or 50 days in the digger?
Now, did you practice emergency landings? Possibly not there, possibly with lighter aircraft, but did you practice them? You know, where you
had. Oh yeah, you practiced, but I mean, you never landed. You didn't. You never landed.
So you didn't make.
You went through the motions. If you always did it with an instructor, and he suddenly cut the throttles, and so you had no engine, so you had to glide down, pick a field. But the fields in Canada are so big. They're about 10 miles by 10 miles. So it wasn't a case of running into a hedge or anything. You might run into a deer or caribou or something like that, but you're not likely to do anything else. But you never landed. When you got down to about 100 feet, you start up again and go around.
Now, any other things you were doing at the service flying training school that you remember, the types of flying?
No, there was nothing special about it.
Well, by this time, were you becoming... It looks like they've decided that... The bombing pilots, they seem to want accurate pilots and people, steady pilots rather than flashy pilots.
Oh, I think so. I think if you look into it, on most things you hear on television, all these top guns, they are the top pilots, the fighter pilots, today, even today. And I think even in wartime, probably so, they'd have a flair, whereas the other fellow was reliable and steady.
Did you know that's what you were? I mean, because we may all be reliable and steady.
No, we'd got at my time in the war, we'd got the stage where we were cannon fodder. We realised the only place we could get into would be bomber command.
And did you think you were reliable? Did you think you were flashier than that, or did you see your limitations? You seem to have seen.
I could see my limitations. I realised I could fly straight and level and follow a course and do as I was told, but. I couldn't, nowadays, I could never imagine being a fighter pilot.
Did you ever think of Coastal Command, or was that just not an option?
You didn't get it. You had no option. You weren't in it. I mean, the job, the best, one of the best jobs was photo reconnaissance. If you could get in a PRU unit. Well, I only knew one chap that ever managed it. And, of course, he had no guns, and he flew as high as he could and went hell for leather.
So, to you... You were always going to be a bomber. If you passed, you were always going to be a bomber pilot. There was no real...
It was either that or... You could always hope to be one of the lucky few that got pushed into transport command. Because then, you automatically, end of the war, you became part of British Airways. Now, but that wasn't going to be my luck.
So what was your final test? What's the final test? I mean, when did you get your wings? How's it all done? Or do you just pass?
No, you had to take a test. Yeah, we actually washed out two fellas on the final test. You know, having flown for, 400 hours, they were suddenly said, you can't be a pilot. This fellow, the doctor, he never made it. He was washed out in the final
Why?
Thing.
At that late stage? Surely they could have got rid of him before then.
I suppose they had to show that somebody had to fail.
And what was the final test? What did you have to do?
You flew for an hour. You did everything you'd been taught to do, take off, landing, stall turns, you know, you can stall an Anson as well, but you do the things like that.
And how did you passed?
Yeah.
No trouble. And what does that mean? What are you? Did you pass as a sergeant pilot or as an officer?
I passed as a sergeant pilot. Everybody passes as a sergeant pilot. Then the next day, they tell those who have been are officers.
Now, did you ever... have a chance of being an officer at that stage? Or?
Oh, I blotted my copybook by getting home late once. I came back from... I'd been on a rampage. We went down to... That was when I was at De Winton. We had 2 weeks leave, so we decided we would go to Hollywood. We thought Hollywood's a nice place to go.
In America?
We didn't realise it was about 3,000 miles away. So we three of us set off, and we rode on the train first of all. And then when we got off this antiquated Canadian steamer,